Josh Rosenthal, breaking news reporter at Fox 5. And I was thinking, how long have you been there? Because I know that we have met in person. And it's been like 3 years, right?
Yeah, I've been at Fox 5 for 3 amazing years now. I really do love working at Fox 5. We have met in passing, but, you know, especially with the pandemic and everybody coming and going and being out of the station, we have not spent nearly as much time together as I would like. So thank you so much for having me, Sarah. This is great.
Well, and it's kind of hard because breaking news and gambling are really two not my fortes. You know, they're really not things that I'm good at, you know? So I'm not really great with getting sources correct, you know, I'm loosey-goosey with the information. You know, I think I heard this. I'm a bad witness. So it's not good.
Well, that sounds like it might be okay for gambling, though. One of my two main interests. That's okay. We've got a lot of loosey-goosey types in the gambling world.
Josh, how much money have you lost betting on the Washington football team? I was watching some of your Instagrams. I'm like, why is this dude even getting conned into putting money on them?
I know. You know what? A couple weeks ago, I swore them off because I had just lost again betting on the Washington football team, which is my team. Generally not a good idea to bet when you have emotion involved anyway. And I was like, I'm done with this. I'm not betting on him anymore. Then we had an expert come on the Rambling and Gambling podcast. And out of the blue, he's like, actually, I really like the Washington football team this weekend. And I said, OK, I'm back in. And now I'm back out because I lost money again. That's life, being a WFT man.
So. My husband loves sports gambling as well. Is your wife into it?
No, not at all. She'll sit with me, though, on the couch and hang out while we watch the game. It's like a family thing for us on Sunday. So she does like that part of it, but she doesn't get into the actual football at all.
What's your favorite gambling app so far? Because I'm tempted to download Caesars only for the commercials. Like, I love the commercials are so good. I'm like,
those are really good. Yeah.
I might have to. What's your favorite app to use?
I like Caesar. So one of the things we talk about, actually, it's a really good idea to have a bunch of apps. So I have a ton of accounts and I'm not betting big money. I want to be clear about that.
I was going to ask you that.
FanDuel, DraftKings, Caesars. Like I have a bunch of them because you can line shop. Like maybe one app is offering like Washington plus 3 points, but this other app's offering Washington plus 3.5. Makes a big difference if you're betting every week over a long period of time. As I hit my mic by accident.
That's
sorry
fine.
About that.
Oh, please. So I was going to ask you that. Like, are you a big money gambler? Like, I mean, are we Michael Jordan here? Or like what?
No.
How much are you putting up?
No. I'm like a bench warmer. I'm not even.
Who has Jordan money, really? I mean, you know, no one's betting $1 million on one golf hole except for like Jordan. But I mean, but my husband, I think, I don't know, like, he has a limit of like, I don't know, $100 a bet or $200, something like he does. I don't think he goes beyond whatever number.
It's rare that I even go that high. Most of my bets are like $20. And this is kind of who we do the podcast for. It's mainly for people who were never going to have like an offshore account or a bookie. But now that it's legal in much of the U.S., including in D.C. and Virginia, and it's coming to Maryland very soon, they're like, you know what? I'm going to be watching the game this weekend anyway. I might as well put $10, $15, $20 on it because it just makes it that much more enjoyable when I watch the game. I call it cost of admission bettors. That's what I am. So that's what I do, $15, $20 a pop. I think it's really important. Unless you're really, really going to take this seriously, you're really going to do the research, you're going to treat it like a job, which I do not do.
Yeah.
Then I think it's important that if you lose your bet, you need to still be able to have a good day. Like, don't, if it's blowing your whole weekend, I wouldn't advise that.
Well, you got a kid now, you know, and a wife. So I'm hoping that you're not, you know, gambling the mortgage, but it's addicting. I mean, for some people it is. But tell me about your podcast. How are you liking being a podcaster? Because it seems like you get to have a lot more fun doing that. I mean, I know you like breaking news, but. Seems like it's fun.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And not to be too complimentary of my Fox 5 DC bosses, but it's really cool to work at a place where like I do typically do a lot of breaking news, some like really like difficult stories. And I went to him one day and I was like, hey, we do a lot of podcasts at Fox 5. What do you think about a podcast for people who are into gambling? And it wasn't even that hard of a sell. They were like, great, this sounds awesome. Sure, go for it. We'll back you up. And now this is what I do. Roughly one day per week. The podcast does come out one day per week. Typically, that's what I get to spend on it. And it's been fantastic. I love it. Basically, we have a different expert on every week. We chat it up. It's NFL season, football's king. So we break down the games, we get best bets, we talk about their background, strategy, especially for casual gamblers like myself. It's been a blast. I love it.
When do you, it's called Rambling and Gambling, right?
Yep, and that's right.
What days does it come out? Give yourself like all the plugs here. We're doing a crossover.
Oh yes. Okay. I'd be happy to. Yeah, it's called Rambling and Gambling. You can get it anywhere you get your podcasts. Please rate, subscribe, and review if you like it. That would be a big help. It drops every Wednesday. We have a new episode. I record the episodes every Tuesday. You can find me on IG too, at Rambling and Gambling. And it's been amazing. We've got a nice community of listeners who seem to really be enjoying it. I absolutely love it. And I will tell you, despite my Washington football losses, Sarah, overall, this has been a more profitable NFL season for me personally, largely because of the advice that we've gotten from experts and specific picks that we've gotten from experts on the podcast. So that's one of those things that makes me feel like, all right, we're moving in the right direction. If even I'm making a couple extra bucks on this, hopefully all of our listeners are.
I mean, what a genius idea, Josh. Like, bring on, you know, this is like a hobby for you. Bring on all the experts, mine them for all their tips, and then you're making money. I mean,
you know how this came up? So I get really neurotic about work. Like, I'm a little bit of a workaholic sometimes. And I was talking to my wife one day, and I was like, you know, sweetheart, a lot of good podcasts at Fox 5. All I'm doing right now is reporting. Should I do more? And she said, okay, you're nuts. You don't need to do more. You're already busy enough. However, if you're going to insist on doing this, at least make it a podcast about something that you're already spending too much time on, like gambling. And boom, here we are. I said, you're a genius. And that's where the idea came from.
So tell me about being neurotic. I mean, you know, about your job. What's that like to be, you know?
Well, it's been a very difficult life, Sarah.
Tell us about that. I mean, because I would think it almost could be like torturous, really, for you, you know, of thinking of breaking news. And then you must leave the station. And, you know, are you neurotic and then almost jealous, too? Like, you don't want anyone else to break news stories? I would be. I mean, I hate when other podcasters succeed.
Yeah. I
mean, minus you.
Thank you. That was very sweet. It is kind of tough at times. I bet that most reporters would tell you that they're neurotic because you kind of have to be to succeed in this job. News does not happen on a schedule. I had a boss back in the day. This is when I worked in Arkansas, of all places, and we had a bank in the same like kind of area as the station. And he'd always say, if you want a 9-to-5, go work at the bank. And he's right, because news happens when it happens. So, you know, some of the biggest stories that I've covered happen to happen on a Saturday. And if it's a big enough deal, generally I'll call the bosses and say, hey, I'm ready to roll. You need me? I'm good to come in. And so that does make you kind of neurotic because, at least for me, it can be very hard to turn off. I'm always glued to my phone. You never know when something's going to happen. And that does kind of give you that little pit in your stomach. Sometimes it can be hard to deal with. However, it's also challenging because I would never work in a desk job. I'm just not that type of person. I'm never going to be able to have a 9-to-5. So it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And overall, I don't want to paint like a negative picture here because I love it. I love what I do. I've been doing it forever. I don't ever want to stop. But the neuroses, yeah, that's a big part of it.
I know. Do you do anything to like, do you meditate? Like, is it hanging out with your wife and your daughter? Like, how do you balance?
Yeah, I'm a really big family guy. There's nothing that's more important to me than family. I now have a one-year-old daughter. She just turned one on November 1st. Her name is Felicity, and that is my everything, my wife and my kid, and I love it. So, yeah, that's my big way to, like, you know, kind of come down. I absolutely love the weekends. This time of year, football Sundays are big for us. My wife doesn't love football, but that's kind of like what we do. We love watching it. We love hanging out. We'll cook dinner. That is my everything. And there's nothing in the world that's more important.
Tell me about a story that got away. Like that, like you're very passionate about your job. You love breaking news. But was there a story like you gone home or you kind of had a hunch, but you needed to do something and you missed it. And like, you always think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have one that stands out, but I definitely remember that feeling. Like, do you ever feel like sometimes you don't remember like a situation, but you do remember the way the situation made you feel?
Totally. Totally.
So that's what I have as an answer to this question. I get that feeling all the time. I would be willing to bet a lot of reporters do, because you get, especially if you're like in the same place for a while, like I have been, you know, I've been at Fox 5 DC for 3 years. I'm from here too. So I have a lot of like contacts just because this is where I grew up. This is where my family is, all that. You get like tips, sometimes good tips from credible people that you think may very well be the case, but for whatever reason, you can't get it to the point where you are positive enough to get it on the air. Because remember, we're not guessing about stuff. We report facts. And so the bar is extremely high to get something on the air. And yeah, that feeling, that occurs all the time, because you hear something that you think might be right. You think it's newsworthy for sure, if it is, but you just can't get it over the finish line. So you kind of file it away and you keep working it, and maybe you figure it out at some point, but that doesn't always happen. Oftentimes it doesn't.
Have you been discouraged? I mean, our business really is, I feel like, under attack. You know, I mean, people have lost a lot of respect. And this is what I tell people about, especially local news. I'm like, every reporter in there, I mean, they truly do care about the story. They're really trying to give you like the most non-biased fact. But there's just this like, there's now this reputation that the media has an agenda. So have you been discouraged over the past like 3-4 years about the credibility of media and the way people think about you?
For sure. For sure. A lot of people have a lot of feelings about media, some legitimate, some not. One thing that I think is tough is I think a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people just look at it as the quote unquote media. And so if one person, one entity is doing something that they may not like for a very good reason, oftentimes that reflects on all of us. So like, I would contend that what you see on cable news, and I'm not singling out any cable news station, sure, but just in general, a lot of what you see there is very, very different from what you see on local news. And oftentimes I, you know, would urge people to watch our product. I'm extremely proud of what we put out at Fox 5 DC. And I think oftentimes if people say, you know, oh, you're fake news, you're this, you're that, which we do hear quite a bit more of nowadays, and we did certainly at the beginning of my career, I think if they actually watch what we put out, they might feel a little differently, because I'm very proud of what we do at Fox 5 DC.
Like, do people come up to you on the street and go, oh, fake news, or like, you're with Fox? Like, I mean, do people like come up and they'll say that to your face? Really?
Yeah, all the time. And I'm not talking about like, it's not like Fox specifically, you know, we hear all kinds of stuff about CNN and MSNBC, but yeah, and I don't want to like make it sound like it happens every day, but absolutely 100% I have been called, I'm telling you, sir, ask any reporter at the station, we've all been called fake news a million times. And sometimes that's because of, you know, sometimes it's because people don't like what we've reported, and as long as they're, you know, talking to me in a respectful manner, I'm always more than happy to have, you know, a respectful back and forth and explain to people, you know, why we do what we do, why we reported what we reported. But yeah, I mean, that's a real thing. I think every reporter probably across the country has encountered quite a bit of that, especially over these past few years.
Yeah, it sucks, because I really feel like people don't I really wish local news stations would do a better job of actually pulling the curtain back and showing how hard you guys work. But I don't know. Right now, it doesn't seem to be happening. But all right, talk to me. You've really broke and been a part of some big stories. You've won an Emmy. The George Floyd story. So tell me about that. You covered the George Floyd right after his murder here, like in DC, right? All of the protests. All right. What was that like?
That was something I definitely will never forget. So this, you know, major event happens. George Floyd is killed. First, we see these protests break out in Minneapolis. And I called the bosses and said, hey, you want to put me on a plane? I'll go. Because I worked in Minneapolis for many years. That was where I was at right before I came to DC. You know, this is my home, but I was at the ABC affiliate in Minneapolis for a long time. And then not too long after that phone call, like the same day, because at the time my boss was like, yeah, we're thinking about it. Just stand by. I'm going to get back to you. Same day, we start to see protests in DC by the White House. So I head out. That was on a Saturday. And it was really interesting during the day. Massive, very peaceful protest. That's a term that I think gets overused sometimes, but that's what it was. I mean, there were like families and children, and it was people marching all over DC, that kind of thing. Then you saw a drastic change, and the families went away. It was a much smaller crowd, and it quickly turned into chaos and violence. And, you know, I'm not trying to sensationalize this. It's all on tape, but especially that first Saturday, we're talking blocks from the White House. You had the tear gas or whatever it was all over the place. I remember a guy picking up a scooter and just like cracking a window of a business right by me, again, blocks from the White House. I remember at one point I'm standing there, and we were like live all night, just continuously. And I looked to my left, and people actually lit a dumpster on fire. It was a literal dumpster fire with flames shooting out of the top. And they pulled it down an alley and pushed it towards this big line of police, because police were kind of trying to move the crowd in one direction. I don't know if they were like just trying to break the police line or cause chaos, but that was what was happening in our nation's capital. It could not have been any more different from what we had covered earlier in the day, but it was a really dicey situation. And that is definitely one that will stand out in my mind forever. And and here's the thing too, like it wasn't just that night. Like, I'm sure you remember, Sarah, this went on for weeks, and in particular, a couple days later. So that was Saturday. The following Monday was the whole thing with President Trump pulling up the Bible.
Yes, right? Yes, and walking across to the church. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're back out again that day, and we had been through the whole weekend. And shortly after that, a couple blocks up the road there, police kind of like corralled a bunch of protesters into a group. They had refused. I think it was like, you remember, we had like curfews in DC after some of that violence had happened. And these were people who were not violent, but they also were not getting off the street in time for the curfew. So as they were getting arrested, we were actually able to do some interviews with some people who were like in handcuffs. And it was really interesting to hear their perspective. I remember one guy, I mean, you can go back and I'll watch all this stuff. He was saying that he was out there because he believed that what he was doing was going to help his children in the future. And this was something that had to be done. So that conviction sticks with me. And, you know, one of the things that we really, really, really worked hard to do was make sure that we got all of the viewpoints into our coverage, because this was not a simple issue. This was a deep issue, and a lot of people had a lot of reasons for a lot of the things that were happening out there, both good and bad. And yeah, that was something that we worked really hard to do.
Is it hard to stand by and be not biased? I mean, you're seeing these people light a trash, you know, a big dumpster on fire. Do you ever want to just say to them, okay, hey, why are you doing this? You know, you're going to go to jail. You're destructive. And not even just that. I'm sure over the years, right, you've been filming and watching people make choices, you know, some against the law, whatever. How do you know? I mean, I would be like, I don't think you want to do that. Like, I would just be, how do you not, or do you say things? How do you do it?
It's not, you know, you do this for long enough. That's the job. Your job is to watch and report the facts. And it's not always the easiest thing, but you do this job for long enough, you get used to standing by, observing, and reporting. You may ask somebody, you know, why they're doing something for the purposes of reporting, right? Because you want to give them the opportunity to explain why it is that they're acting in a certain way or doing a certain thing. But it's actually not hard for me to stand by and observe, just because that is what the job is. I think it's an important part of the job. You don't want to have an opinion, or certainly, you know, people are people, everyone has opinions, but you don't want to let those opinions affect your coverage. And that's really important, because if you do over an extended period of time, I think people will doubt your credibility. And as a journalist, really, when it comes down to it, your credibility is all that you have.
Yeah.
So for those reasons, I'm actually pretty okay with standing by and observing.
We heard from Melanie Allnwick, you know, she I was talking about safety situations because, you know, you were down there for the George Floyd protest, you know, January 6th insurrection. Do you ever worry, you know, she said, you know, for her, she's been in war zones, but the scariest part is going out on the street at 3:30 in the morning, you know, because you don't know kind of who's coming out of, you know, the darkness or whatever. What about you from a male perspective? Do you ever worry about your safety?
Yeah, and more so in recent years than I used to when I was younger. Maybe that's mostly just because when you're
now
young.
Now you're a dad.
Right? Yeah, you don't know any better now. So I definitely do worry more than I used to. I'm kind of at the other end of the spectrum from Mel timing-wise because she's a morning reporter. I'm a night reporter, right? She's on the early shows. I'm generally on our 10 and 11 o'clock p.m. newscast. Safety is a concern. However, other than just like on the normal day, being aware of your surroundings and doing what you can, Fox 5 is really good about safety. Anytime that I felt uncomfortable, I just say, hey, this isn't a good place for us to be. We're going to do our live shot elsewhere. And then for the really dicey stuff, George Floyd, January 6th, a couple of other stories.
Yeah, what about it? What'd they say?
They send us security, which is fantastic. But like all of our coverage, pretty much for those types of events, we have security with us, which is really wonderful. That first night that I described with the burning dumpster, it was a woman. You never want to judge a book by its cover, Sarah, because the woman that came out with us, this was like right off the bat. We really didn't know what we were going into. And it was kind of spur of the moment. So I'm sure it was difficult to get security guards. We had one security guard that night. For most of the rest of the coverage, we had two. She was a woman. She was a former DC cop, probably pushing about 60. And she comes in like street clothes and like a little purse. And I'm like, well, like, okay, like, all right. Like, you know, but I was like, really, is this like, she was incredible.
She's badass.
She was badass and amazing. And she like had our back. Because here's something people don't realize. When you're, so it's like me and a photographer, right? It was our chief photographer at the time. He's since moved on to a great opportunity.
Oh, I love
his name, Steve Williams.
Yeah,
Steve, right?
Awesome.
So Steve has a camera and he's looking through the lens. He can't look to his left and the right. I'm looking at the camera. So I'm observing what's happening near us so I can describe it to people, but that's not the same as being able to observe whether like a guy is going to come up and like, you know, cheap shot you in the face or whatever the case may be. She was amazing. She was on my back the whole night, moving me this direction, that, keeping people off of us. It was great. So like, yeah, safety is a concern. However, I do think the station does a really good job as much as they can of putting us in a good position to report the news, but stay safe while we do it.
How is it to gain sources? I mean, that's always, you know, again, this is something I could never do because I love to gossip. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure you have like some sources that if we knew their names, we, you know, our jaws would be on the floor. How do you get them to trust you?
Time and patience. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key. Like the best people for me are people who I've talked to for a long time. And you don't just talk to them when something happens and you need information. You talk to them when times are good and relaxed and you build a relationship, because then they know that they will be treated appropriately, that what they tell you will, you know, be told at least their identity and confidence. And that's the biggest factor, time and elbow grease and mutual trust. It's, you can't just call somebody the day that you need something and expect to get it. It's a relationship building business. And I think that's the secret to developing sources.
And what would you say like the longest time period it was to take you to build a source? Like, cause I mean, that's a very, you have to be very patient.
Yeah. I mean, years, in some cases, years. And I've had, and you know, it's interesting. I've had situations that start out like really contentious because somebody didn't like a report that I did for whatever reason. But then you keep nurturing that relationship. You explain your side of it. And, you know, you talk about peeling back the curtain. It's not that like we're ever trying to hide something, but I do think it helps when people hear like, okay, this is what I reported and this is why I reported it, and have those kinds of conversations. But yeah, like that can take years, especially if you get off to a rocky start. Although sometimes the best sources end up being the people that you started having a rocky relationship with. I think there's something to be said for like shared experiences, whether they're good or bad. And this is probably true of just like normal life too. But like once you go through something good or bad with someone, it strengthens that relationship oftentimes in the future, I believe.
Absolutely. So you win an Emmy for your George Floyd reporting. What was it? Was that the first Emmy you had won?
No, I've won a couple of them.
Oh, okay. Where do we keep these? All right. We've got several news Emmys. Okay. All right.
I have a few.
Okay.
And I mean, it's always a huge honor. And in particular, I really do appreciate it. And it means a lot to me on a story like that. Actually, most of the awards that I've won in the past have been because of breaking news. I like breaking news in part because oftentimes, especially with like the George Floyd stuff, that's a time where TV news to me serves a really important purpose for the people at home, the people watching, because when there's like violence, like we just talked about, by the White House, people for very good reason are not going to go down there and check it out themselves, but they want to see what's happening in their home, what's happening in our nation's capital. And TV news uniquely has the ability to get in there and show people exactly what is happening. And I think, you know, like print reporters do amazing work. And in some ways, print can do stuff that we can't do on the TV side. But when there's big breaking news, something like this, I think that we are uniquely suited to show people what's really happening on the ground. So if I win an award for that type of coverage, especially something that is as important and as kind of like, you know, something that we will remember for a very long time, a significant event in American history like the death of George Floyd was and is, then, you know, in that sense, the awards do mean a lot to me.
In your entire career, what's been the story that's had you like the most, like your adrenaline the most going? Like, you know, you thrive off breaking news. You're addicted to it. What was the one you were like, I can't get this is it?
Probably the George Floyd. I mean, just because that was really crazy. You know what I mean? You talk about adrenaline. It's like you don't know what's going to happen next. So probably that. But then there are some other days that stand out for other reasons. Yeah. I remember like, really, you'll like this, Sarah. Very early in my career, my first reporter job, I was in Gainesville, Florida, fresh out of college. And like one day I interviewed both Busta Rhymes and The Wiggles. Do you know The Wiggles? It's like they're like a children's act the same day. And then like the next day you're back out like, you know, behind some like crime tape because there's some sort of like awful shooting or whatever. Like those moments too stick with you because you're like, what is this job? Like it's local news in particular. It's so random.
It's so random. All right, let's talk about your personal life. Is your wife in news?
Yeah. So she's a reporter. She's not currently doing it. She's, you know, taking care of the kid along with me. And it's just working for us right now. I applaud her for it. And she's so incredibly good at it. But yeah, so we met working in Little Rock, Arkansas. We both work for the Fox affiliate in Little Rock. We started within a month of each other. She's from northern Minnesota. I'm from DC. Needless to say, Arkansas was a bit of a culture shock for both of us, and we immediately hit it off, and you know, we've been together ever since. And that's I tell her she's my destiny. Like how random is that, right? Like I moved to like Little Rock, Arkansas, of all places, and meet this amazing woman, you know, wife and mother. So yeah, we've been together ever since, and it's been incredible. We are happy to have lived in Arkansas because we met each other. We were happy to leave Arkansas.
You're thrilled to leave. You can say it. You're thrilled to leave.
After a couple of years, and then, yeah, so we went from Arkansas to Minneapolis. We worked at the same station there together as well, the ABC affiliate in Minneapolis, and we were there for a long time. We have family there because, like I said, Catherine, my wife, she's from northern Minnesota, but we have family in Minneapolis where we live. And liked it very much. Winters were, you know, brutal. Like, it's just really rough. And, like, and the lack of sunlight just crushed me. It's, like,
depressing.
It's depressing. It's so depressing. But, you know, we were happy to come here. And it's kind of nice, too, because, like, we do love going back to Minnesota. That's always going to be such a special place for us. And it's where we got married and we have family there and everything. I was just back there a couple weeks ago, actually. We love it. But it is nice not to have to report through
to live
Minnesota.
There. I get it. it.
Minnesota Renters.
Yeah. My husband's from outside Detroit. I love going to visit Detroit, but Michigan, you know, northern Michigan and Michigan in general is great in the summer, but that's like it, you know? I mean, the rest of the time is gray skies.
Right?
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys always know that you wanted to have a family, or was having your daughter sort of this spontaneous, like, all right, you know what, screw it, we'll have a kid? Like, was this all part of the plan?
Yeah, this is part of the plan. this is my design.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're big time family people always. Like, even in our younger years, you know, we definitely like to go out more than we do now, but family has always been it for us. So this is what we wanted to do, and it's been amazing. This last year with my daughter Felicity, I had high hopes, and it's exceeded even those lofty expectations. It's amazing.
It does change you, though, right? Isn't it a weird change when you become a parent? It's like all these things about life that you never cared about, like suddenly your safety, right? I'm sure for you would have gone into any situation. Now, like, all of a sudden you think about like your significant other and your child so much more, right? It's a weird thing.
100%. Couldn't agree with you more. And like other stuff like job security, like what happens if like I lose my job? Like, how are we going to pay the mortgage? Whatever. These are things that like, of course you think about previously, but before it was always like, oh, whatever, I'll land on my feet. And now those are more real fears for me, because I'm like, oh man, like I have to support my family, my daughter, whatever.
Well, diapers are so goddamn expensive. It's like, I've got to keep going. You know, I mean, it's just crazy.
Now, you're not kidding. Yeah, baby stuff not cheap.
And the food, it's crazy. All right, well, let's talk about your upbringing. So you grew up in Maryland, right? Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I'm from Rockville originally. I went to Wooten for high school. I went to University of Maryland. All my family's still here pretty much. And yeah, I loved it here. So that was kind of, so just to like be clear for everyone, that was kind of my track record. Born and raised here, went to Wooten in Rockville, went to University of Maryland. Then I worked all reporter gigs in Florida, Little Rock, Arkansas, Minneapolis, and then DC. But yeah, I'm born and raised here. I love it.
And it was news like always what you wanted to do? Or like, did your family always think, you know, you were going to be a dentist? And then they were like, oh, Josh, wow. News reporter.
I'd say it was pretty clear to me that this is what I wanted to do late in high school, I guess, maybe like very early in college, probably late in high school. Honestly, at first, it was just like a combination of things that I thought I was good at, like different skills that I thought I would be well suited towards. And then actually, if you want to know the truth, I wanted to do sports at first. And that's so like, I went through journalism school, and I do have like the same training that like any University of Maryland kid would get, but I wanted to do sports, and I had trouble finding a sports job out of college. So I was like still working in a carpet warehouse, which is like where I worked during college. And, one news director in Gainesville was like, well, I don't have a sports job for you, but do you want to try news? And I was like, okay, all right. Like, I needed work. I wanted to get going. So packed up, moved to Florida, and I loved it. I loved it. And yeah, that it was like just one of those happy coincidences, because I ended up liking news more than I think I would have liked sports. And then fast forward to now, this job at Fox 5 DC, I get to do a ton of sports at Fox 5 DC, which is great. Like, my main gig is news. That's always going to be my bread and butter. However, I like, you know, when the Nationals were in the World Series, they sent me to Houston. It was amazing. I was like in the locker room when they're having the like champagne shower, and I'm a Nationals fan. Like, this is absolutely incredible. So it's pretty cool now that like, even though I am a news guy, I get to do a lot of sports at Fox 5, and that's a big plus for me.
And so did you grow up with siblings?
Yep. I got two brothers. I'm the oldest. We're still very, very close.
Are you? Yeah.
Yeah. We're really close. They come over all the time. Especially, you know, again, football Sundays. Like,
how
literally,
does your wife like that?
Oh, she loves it. You know what? We're so lucky because she gets along great with both of my brother's wives. So that's perfect. Not always the case, but yeah. So like, they were all over here. Last Sunday, for instance, like, I'm sitting in my basement right now. This is where we were all hanging, the whole family, kid and everything. And it was great.
And what did your parents do? Were they involved in any news stuff? I mean, like, you were kind of like the first person in your family to sort of go in this
direction. Yeah, I'm the only one. Well, my dad was in like construction. My mom is like a diet coach. And she's
really?
Like really. She's like insanely fit. It's obnoxious if you want to know the truth for the rest of us. She's like, wow. she's like she hasn't had like sugar since like 1982. She's one of those types. So this is out of left field. There's no journalism whatsoever in my family.
Was that hard growing up with a mom that was so healthy? Like, did you have any sort of like body image issues? I know that's like so taboo for men still, but like with a mom that was that healthy.
No. Actually, and she's like so amazing and supportive, and like it was never. It's not one of those deals where like she wouldn't like let us eat what we wanted to eat or whatever. We always knew what we should be eating, but we were never stopped from eating whatever we want, really. And she's like, you know, really good at just you hear about it a lot, but she's pretty wonderful at not driving it the point home too much. So no, there were no body image issues or anything like that.
It sounds like, yeah, you guys had good balance.
Yeah, we definitely had good balance. And I think we've always been a pretty tight knit family. We're like a talking family. So like we talk about our feelings and stuff like that. And that's how I hope to raise, you know, Felicity. And that's how, my wife and I get by too. We always say that our strength is our communication. Like we really do talk about stuff even when it's difficult to talk about. And that's just something that has been instilled in me from a young age. And I continue to believe in it. I think it's good to get feelings out there and have these deep talks and work through issues, because I think it gets really tricky and kind of dangerous for relationships when you keep stuff bottled in and you don't talk about it.
Oh my God, 100%. Especially now that you have a kid, right? I mean, you have to communicate like even more, and you're exhausted, and there's all kinds of, you know, things happening. Yeah, that's impressive, Josh, because a lot of people don't have that freedom, you know, growing up. So that it sounds like you guys always had this kind of open, healthy family. That's terrific.
That's my mom. Yeah, that's all my mom's doing. And I think she really nailed it with that one. And I'm very appreciative of that. And it's something that I strive to do with my family now. It's tough, like especially in those heated moments, like you never want to do that. It's the hardest thing in the world to do in those moments. But I'm a firm believer in it. And I think that if you take the time to work your way through that and to talk about things as difficult as it may be, I think that's a real recipe for success.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we've kind of been doing like this rapid fire, you know, sort of at the end of interviews. But then it turns out to be like a lot longer. But I'm curious, what's something about you is there anything about you that you've wanted to share with the audience but you just never have? Because you don't have like the Good Day DC gig where you have to like talk about, you know, right, celebrity news, and you got to share your relationship. I'm sure you're dying to reveal something to the audience that you've never shared. What is it?
I don't know. I'm generally pretty like private and like legitimately pretty boring.
Really?
I don't.
What about, is there anything about your teeth? You have like amazing teeth. Did you have braces for 4 years? I mean, you have like a really good, and you have gorgeous eyes too.
Oh my God.
People come up and hit on
you. You're making me blush here. My goodness.
Well, no. I mean, I don't mean to offend you or upset your wife, but I mean, that's, you've got so stunning eyes and great teeth. Do people come up to you and go, oh, all right, I'll speak to you. I like your eyes.
Thank you. That's really nice of you. Teeth, I had a good orthodontist and I was very lucky to have one. I do hear about the eyes from time to time. I don't know. I got lucky. I have nothing for you in that. I got lucky, and yep, I hear about it. And I think it's the blue eyes and dark hair combo that people seem to like. And like my friends make fun of me mercilessly, like, oh, blue. Oh, it's Josh's blue eyes again, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, they'll be like, blue eyes and butt chin. That's something. Like, I literally heard that in a, like I put like a lot of weekends I'll post like my football picks on, like, for instance, like last Sunday I posted my football picks, did well by the way, 3 or 4 on Twitter. Yeah, and I had like I had my kid in my lap, and she also has very blue eyes and a butt chin, and like one of my buddies like copied the tweet into this, like, you know, like the like text chain that you have with all your friends, and it was like hashtag like blue eyes and butt chins, like, and then some other comments that I won't give you here, but yeah, I do hear about them.
Yeah, well, it works for you. It's two striking things about, well, actually three. I mean, you know, I wasn't going to say the butt chin, but I guess we'll throw it in there.
Yeah, you can comment on the butt chin. I hear about it.
Tell us about your biggest dad fail so far, because I have so many as a mom. Like, I don't know if you guys, like, if your wife was a baby, like, if she babysat when she was younger, or like you did. I mean, you know, you're the oldest, right? So maybe you kind of took care of your younger brothers. But I knew nothing about having kids, and I've had so many fails. What's been your biggest dad fail?
I've had a million dad fails, Sarah. I try really hard, but I'm such a work in progress. The one that crushed me the most, that hurt my heart, was we were at my in-laws up in Bemidji, Minnesota a couple weeks ago. I was watching the kid. She's like crawling around, and I don't even think it was really my fault, but she slipped. Her hand slipped from under her. You know, the balance isn't good. And she went face first into a hardwood floor, and she was bleeding. Her lip was bleeding. And yeah, I know. And thank God that's all it was. And like, you know, we put ice on her, but she's in tears, and I felt so bad. And you feel like you failed your kid, and there's blood, and it's, oh my God, is there something wrong? Blah, blah, blah. My father-in-law is like a surgeon, and like, I made my wife call him. He was like out golfing or something. And I was like, you gotta ask him, you gotta, just in case. And so that's one. You know, my kid, she's so active. She's like nonstop. And like, we were at the pediatrician yesterday for her 1 year checkup. And even the doctor's like, I've never seen a kid that moves like this. Like, she's just nonstop. That can make changing a dirty diaper extremely difficult.
Oh my
especially,
God.
Especially if we're talking about a number two. So we've had that. You talk about dad fails. And I mean, the blowouts
and the amount of poop you get on yourself, and just like the amount that they produce, you're like, this is like, I know the amount of times
like
you've been crapped
like
on.
Not even 20 pounds. Where is this coming from? How's it like? It's so, yeah, I've got dad fails for you for sure.
It's totally, it's so true. Josh, what's the goal? What is the goal? Like, what do you want to do? I mean, you know, is the goal to be breaking news, like, you know, for ABC? Is it, you know, are you happy where you are and you're just enjoying it? If you could wave a magic wand, what would it be?
You know, that's something that I think about a decent bit these days, Sarah, because my goal, and like, I don't know, like, so many of my peers like want to do network and this and that. I maybe I should, but that was never my goal. My goal, honestly, it was always just to get back to Washington, D.C. This is my home. This is where I wanted to live. And I wanted to do local news. My goal is what I'm doing now. And I don't know, maybe I should, you know, look into doing something else in the future. Obviously, I would always listen to anybody with an opportunity, you know, trying to do what's best for my family and all that stuff. But I am honestly extremely, extremely happy here, in particular at Fox 5, because not only do I get the news fix, but like, there are not that many places that are going to be like, sure, you're our reporter that we throw out there in the middle of, you know, these major protests or whatever. Well, yeah, you can also be off the street one day a week and do a podcast about gambling. So this job, it really does kind of scratch that itch for me. I feel very lucky to be here. And you know, who knows what the future holds, but for right now, my magic wand, I mean, I'd love $1 million. I'd love not to worry about my
yeah,
like,
right? We'd like,
know,
to make more money.
Right. Like, so I've got wishes, don't get me wrong, but like, job wise, I am very happy. I'm very satisfied.
Tell me, who's your favorite athlete? You're obviously a sports guy. Who's your favorite athlete?
I love the Wizards. I'm a Wizards guy through and through.
Really?
Historically, Gilbert Arenas is my favorite, like that. Yeah, because, you know,
really, did you ever get to interview him?
Yeah. So in college, I always tell people, this is actually the best job I ever had, even though I didn't really get paid for it. I was an intern for Sports Talk 980. That was it's still 980. It's not Sports Talk anymore. But yeah, I was in college. This was the most amazing gig for like a sports nut like me, and for a Wizards nut, basically. I was an intern. They were paying like a stringer, they call it, you know what a stringer is, to go to the Wizards games every night, home games, and basically interview the players after the game and then edit some sound together that they would use on the next day's broadcast. And I was like, hey, I'll do it for free. And they were like, cool. And they sent me, literally, like, I still have the press badges. I went to just about every single Wizards home game. This was during the, I think it was the 2006-07 season. I always get my years mixed up. It was the first year that Gilbert had like a really serious knee injury, and the team was great. And then it just didn't work out in the playoffs. They get swept, I think, by the Cavs. I don't know. I have to fight, you know, some of the stuff blends together.
Oh, I'm
but
sure.
I was there for like every single game, and I'll tell you what else was great, Sarah. Not only am I going in there and talking to players after every game, recording it, doing what I love, I was in college at the time, right? I'm still at the University of Maryland. They, I don't know if they still do, but at the time they fed the media at Wizards games. So I would go, I'd get a free meal before the game. I'd watch basketball. Halftime, you go back in and they served ice cream. They had ice cream sundaes. And then after the game, I would go and interview the players. And it was incredible. I mean, it was just like, it was like a dream come true for a sports nut.
He always has a reputation though as a weird guy. Is that true? Like, you know, I mean, he had the whole gun incident, then he sort of mocked it. I mean, people always painted him to be rather odd. But
yeah, so that came a little later. And I certainly did not know Gilbert personally, right? I was there for like one season and I was just one of many reporters who would come back and talk to him. He was always nothing but kind to me. And one thing I loved is like if you asked him like a slightly offbeat question, he'd go in, like he'd give you a great response. Sometimes those responses were better than actual basketball questions. And yeah, I found him to be amazing. And just as a fan, I always really loved watching him because the Wizards have been so bad for so long. And then for me, I'm 36. Like that was kind of the first team where I was like old enough to like really watch the team and that we were good and we were legitimately good before those Gilbert injuries. So yeah, that's my favorite all time guy for sure.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given in your career?
Listen more than you talk. That was one of my grandfathers said that way back in the day, and that stuck with me. And especially for reporting, it makes a lot of sense. Like if you're talking too much, you're not learning, you're missing stuff. But if you're listening, you pick up on a lot. And I think that helps in a lot of different walks of life.
You know, you grew up here, kind of last question. You grew up here and, you know, I mean, DC is like, you know, the center, right? For so many things, obviously with the nation's capital, but what do you think makes this area and the viewers, what do you think makes this area special compared to, no offense to Arkansas, but, you know, compared to like some others, no, sorry, Minnesota. But I mean, what do you think's unique about the DMV?
It's a melting pot. It's a melting pot, man. I mean, like so many people come here from so many different places. Like, you know, I loved working in Minnesota, but like in Minnesota, like they do kind of like want to hear from Minnesotans and like same deal in Arkansas and that kind of thing. Nobody's from here. I mean, like I'm from here, but like nobody's from here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In DC. And I think that makes it a very unique place to live. And it's a lot of different cultures here, which I love. And I just think that you're exposed to a lot of stuff here in, you know, DC, Maryland, and Virginia, the whole like DMV area that you're not going to be exposed to in other parts of the country.
Love it. I mean, so interesting to talk to you. And by the way, you never seem like you got one of those reporter voices. I'm really glad about that because, you know, sometimes you know, it's like over the years in the news business, you talk to people and they have a regular voice and then they go on air. You're like, okay, I don't know. I've never been down with that. Like, I know that's like some people are really into it, but thank you for never getting that. So there you go.
Hey, anything for you, Sarah. No problem.
Not that I'm like the be all end all of any of this podcast, but I think the audience appreciates that you have a real voice.
Thank you very much. I do try, you know, pretty hard just to be myself because I think that's like that helps, you know, back to credibility, which is really, really important to me. Like, I think, you know, viewers, listeners can tell when you are being you. And that's not always easy to do when you are on TV or on, you know, a podcast or whatever. But that is something that I strive to do.
It's great. It comes off very real and natural, which is awesome. Because I feel like, I don't know, it's a generational thing. I don't want to offend the boomers that are, you know, listening, but it's like our boomer reporter friends, like they put on that accent. So thanks for not doing that.
Thank you. That's a very nice compliment. Thank you. Okay.
So Josh, when can people, what's your schedule? Are you Monday to Friday? I know you're doing breaking news. Tell people when they can watch you and then where they can follow you.
Yeah, sure. So Monday through Friday, I'm on the 10 and 11 o'clock p.m. newscasts on Fox 5 DC. Good place to find me is on Twitter at Josh Rosenthal TV. J Rosenthal.
Take
TV.
Your time. Sarah, look, we're.
I'm failing you here.
I'm failing you. I mean, I'm the interviewer. I should know. I should like know your. No, I don't even know.
I should know my own Twitter handle. Josh Rosenthal TV. And please, if you've ever gambled, if you think it might be something that interests you, check out the Rambling and Gambling podcast. All you have to do is search Rambling and Gambling anywhere you get your pods. Also on IG at Rambling and Gambling. I'm really proud of what we're churning out there, and I would love it if people checked it out.
Yeah, look, I mean, you're convincing me. I mean, I think I'm going to get in on it and just, you know, throw some caution.
Tell your husband to check it out too. If he's into gambling,
he will totally love it. Josh, this was awesome. Thanks for taking the time and so fascinating to get to know you. You know, on a more personal level.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Had a lot of fun. Really appreciate you having me. And hopefully one of these days, we will get to spend a little bit more time together in person. I'll see you at the station or something.
I know, one of these days. All right, Josh Rosenthal, everybody follow him. Amazing.